So if you're interested in taking notes, you can pull out the green sheet of paper from your bulletin. If you'd like to do that, you can. So I'm not going to force you to do that. That's just my opinion. In fact, it's my opinion that you're all a bunch of opinionated people. And if you think I'm wrong, well, that's just your opinion. Right? We live in an opinionated world. Pastor Jay obviously is gone, which is why I'm here. And I asked him, so what would you like me to preach on? He's like, well, you know, we're between series, so you get to choose. That's like giving someone a blank check, you know what I mean? I mean, it's this is sort of what's been going on in my heart this summer. How many of you listen to, like, talk radio? Yeah, talk radio, a lot of talk radio. Or... late night, there's, talk shows. You got Letterman's, Johnny Carson, you got Leno. I know, Carson. I just kind of try to be relevant to everybody in here. Okay. Yeah. Fail. Okay. All right, so that's not happened. But we live in a really opinionated world. How many of you know what blogs are? Couple of you, good. Both of you, all right? Blogs. This thing called the internet. Have you heard of it? It's. I remember in the back in the late '90s, chat rooms were really, really popular. They're still around, but I can remember, people. Yeah, I found this great chat room. It's, they discuss. Science or whatnot, or I found this chat room and they got this topic and we go in there and me and the other person in that room, we just talk to each other, it used to be able to share your opinion just with a smaller group of people in one room. Now, we share opinions with the whole world. Let's not just limit it to one little room, right? I mean, we have our phones and, I could take a picture of all of you. So I could post it right to Facebook right now so that everyone can see who's not here, what you look like, I do have a Twitter account, even though I don't use it too much, only because, I'm not sure that people really are interested in knowing my opinions about what I had for lunch. You know what I'm saying? I don't know that people are really that interested. Yet, in our culture today, it is almost like a social right, isn't it? If you have a thought about something, you need to, text it to your friends, or you need to get on Twitter and post it, or, on Facebook, or maybe you see something, you take, snap a picture and you send it to everybody, and you get online and you find some topic, some blog, and someone says something that's kind of racy or provocative, and you're like, oh, I got to comment on that. And then it's fun to comment on someone's comments, and then you got comments and comments and comments. You got this chain of comments all the way down, and not too long, and people don't even know what the topic of this discussion is, in this article. And it goes on and on and on and on. We live in an opinionated world. Throughout any topic. Syria, anyone heard of that country? Oh, good. Thank you, Tia, I'm glad. All right, heard of that topic, yeah. You get throughout, how about gender confusion? I read an article about that this week. NFL, I'm a big fan, all right? A couple of us, go Buffalo. Ah, they're in first place right now. So that's good, throughout any topic, we could have a lively discussion. We could have a lively discussion about any topic. Just throw a topic out. Everyone has an opinion about everything. In fact, there's so many opinions out there. It's like, how do I navigate in the midst of this highly opinionated world? And that's really what I'd like us to think about this morning. How to live wisely in an opinionated world. We are a world that is very charged with emotion, ideas and opinions. And so this has been sort of something that's going through my mind this summer. I've been reading through Proverbs, and probably about a month ago, maybe mid-July, I'm reading through Proverbs. I get to chapter 18, and I get to chapter 18, verse 2. And this verse just leaped right off the page. In fact, it's printed right at the top of your green sheet, Proverbs 18, 2. A fool finds no pleasure in understanding, but delights in airing his own opinions. I went, huh. A fool finds no pleasure in understanding, but delights in airing his own opinions. I said, there it is. That's the world I live in right there. That is my world. Now, I would never say that that is my life. I'm not going to say that's me. I'm going to say that's my world. Because obviously, if I have an opinion, my opinion must be, it must be true, it must be right. Otherwise, I wouldn't think it, right? Otherwise, I wouldn't have that thought. If I thought differently, then I would have a different opinion. I'd have a different thing. So obviously, that doesn't pertain to me. That pertains to the world that I live in. A fool finds no pleasure in understanding, but delights in airing his own opinions. Or if you want to get a little literal, delights in just kind of like opening your heart and just let whatever's in there just kind of come gushing out. Whatever's in your heart, just let it come gushing out. In fact, we are so quick to text and to type and to speak today that we have really lost our sense of filter for guarding what comes out. I'm sure most of us have done this, that we have sent a text or we've typed something and hit send or enter before we actually thought about what we were saying, and we wish we could retract that and take it back. You know, or you think that you're sending it to the right person, but you actually were one person down in your contacts, you know. And so, you know, instead of sending some lovey-dovey to my wife, you know, I send it to Mike, you know. Or, you know, we've all been there, okay? We've all been there. We've all done that. We've all been there. A fool finds no pleasure in understanding, but delights in airing his own opinions. We have to just create a few definitions here just at the onset, right? When the Bible talks about a fool, like, for instance, a lot of people go to Psalm 14, verse 1, where it says a fool has no thought of God or has no understanding or desire or no knowledge of God, doesn't want God. And we often kind of go there and think, well, a fool is an atheist who has no belief in God. A fool doesn't believe in God. The idea there is not so much that God doesn't exist. A fool is one who says God is not necessary. God can exist all he wants. He's just not necessary for my life. I live as a fool. I have a perspective that God is not necessary for my life or for anything, and I just kind of live according to that idea. So an atheist might fit into that, but functionally, most of us live very atheistic in how we function through life. We live our days and our week as if God has no relevance to what we're doing. I make my own decisions about work. I make my own decisions about my finances. I make my own decisions about relationships. I make my own decisions about what I do and where I'm going to go. And if I have a situation that is I'm not sure of, then I might invoke God. But functionally, you know, practically speaking, oftentimes the reality of life is that people function like a biblical fool, one who has no regard for God. So Proverbs 18:2 says, a fool finds no pleasure or takes no delight in understanding. A fool has no desire to understand. Why should I understand? I have things to say. Why should I seek to know something first before I speak? I live in a world that says I can say and think and do whatever I want, so I'm just going to get it out there. Proverbs 18:2, a fool finds no pleasure in understanding, but delights in airing his own opinion. Two more definitions, and then I would like us to look at Proverbs chapter 2. And I just want to kind of walk through, because I think Proverbs chapter 2 really gives us some God's counsel on how we can live wisely in an opinionated world. A couple more definitions, just one as we kind of get started. Wisdom. What is wisdom? For me, one of the simplest ways of understanding wisdom would be the appropriate application of appropriate knowledge. I mean, wisdom is the application of knowledge, but you have to have the right way to apply knowledge, and you have to have the right knowledge to apply. Does that make sense? Wisdom is the appropriate application. Understanding, then, would be having the capacity or the ability to discern or differentiate between what knowledge is worth applying and keeping and which knowledge isn't. Understanding is able to look at a situation and have a concept of what should and shouldn't be, what ought from what is to be disregarded, so that I can wisely apply that knowledge to the situation and actually live, function wisely. Does that make sense? So a fool, according to Proverbs 18:2, has no pleasure, does not enjoy understanding, biblical understanding. All right? So let's jump over to Proverbs chapter 2. And I want us just to kind of walk through there. Proverbs, I love the book of Proverbs. Just to kind of set the context for chapter 2. In fact, the first 8, maybe 9 chapters of the book of Proverbs is Solomon giving instruction to his kids, to his boys. I mean, that's really what you have there. You have the thoughts of a father who so desperately wants his children to know and understand how to live wisely in their world, that he writes down for us his thoughts as he presents them to his kids. And we know from the context that, you know, he's not talking about, you know, children who are, you know, 5 or 7 or not even 10 or 12 years old. I mean, he's talking to adult children. We know that, Proverbs chapter 1 that we just read. My son, when sinners entice you to go out at night and to do all kinds of destructive things, don't go with them. That's not instruction and counsel you give to an 8-year-old. That's something that you give, you know, to a teenage and a college age and a young man. In those first 8 chapters, it gives instruction on how to avoid tempting situations with women. I haven't really shared that with my 5-year-old. You know, that's not instruction. That is instruction I give to young men. See, the wisdom and counsel here is a father who has a heart for his children and his adult children. The wisdom is appropriate for all ages, but he's instructing adult children. So he says in verse 1, my son, if, right, we have a condition, if you accept my words. What does it mean to accept? I mean, we sort of understand that. It means just to receive. My son, if you accept my words, if you receive my words. Now, how does a person receive anything? Right? If the father has words to share, how does the son receive them? Well, the son has to go hang out with who? With the father. Right? He has to go where the father is speaking or be around the father. You cannot receive if you are not there to take. And even if you are there, that doesn't mean you're actually receiving it, because you can reject it. We're here this morning, and you have voluntarily come, most of you. You know, I don't know. Maybe someone dragged you here, you know. But you are here. You're not leaving. So there's some desire to receive. We have all kinds of opportunities to receive around here at Calvary. We talked about the adult Bible classes in the mornings. We have electives. We have Bible study groups. Most of us, I'm sure, have a copy of the Bible, and we certainly could get you one if you don't have one. And there are all kinds of opportunities to receive. But he says to his son, my son, if you accept, if you receive my words. And second, he says, if you store up my commands within you. Now, back in that day, they didn't have banks like we have today, and they didn't, you just took your money and you kind of would store it up, maybe somewhere safe in your house or under your tent or somewhere. Or if you, if it's in the summer, you would go collect all that you need for the winter, knowing that in the wintertime you're not going to have opportunity. And the idea of storing up means to gather and take in, not for immediate use, but to have later on when the time is needed for that. Because my son, you have to accept and receive my words. And not just receive them, but you need to store them away. You need to store them away so that when the appropriate time comes, you have access to these commands. Right? It's the idea of getting prepared. See, I'm convinced that in our highly opinionated world, we can talk about wisdom all we want, but we really are not interested in wisdom, biblical wisdom. We're not. Because here he tells his son that there is a certain preparedness that you need to have in order to receive wisdom. Just because you want wisdom in a situation doesn't mean you're going to get it if you're not willing to receive wisdom when it comes, and if you are not willing to store up so that when an appropriate time comes, you can use it. If you look back at chapter 1 that we just read, it says, wisdom will mock you when calamity comes because you rejected wisdom when wisdom was available. See, the time to get wisdom is not when you're in a crisis. See, wisdom is not something that I'm in a crisis now, I got to figure out what to do. No, wisdom is something that you have stored up God's commands in your heart so that when the appropriate time comes, you have access to it. That's what he's talking about, storing up, being prepared so that you can live wisely. Verse 2. He says, and if you turn your ear to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding. And see, not only do you have to be prepared, you have to accept and store up, but you also then need to actually pursue wisdom. You need to turn your ear toward, give your attention to listen, to apply your heart to understanding. When you apply yourself to something, that you are willing to discipline yourself in that pursuit so that you can get it and so that it can become a part of you. To apply your heart, to turn your ear. There is an intentional pursuit of one who desires to be wise. So you accept, you store up, you turn your ear to, you seek to apply to your life. The next verse, if you cry out for and you call out for wisdom. In other words, Jesus said that out of the overflow of the mouth, the heart speaks. In other words, the mouth is sort of like the gate of what's inside the heart. And so he says here in verse 3 that you have to call out for and cry out for it. In other words, your pursuit of wisdom has a verbal expression to it. I'm sure this is going to happen in many of your homes. When you leave here today, you're going to go home for lunch or you're going to hang around here and talk a little bit. And pretty soon, some of the young ones are going to say, hey, I'm hungry. Hey, when are we going to go home? Hey, what are we having for supper? All the way home in some of your vehicles, you're going to be hearing this. What are they doing? They are crying out for that which they want. They are calling out for it. In other words, we cry out for that which we want. And that's what he says here. If you want wisdom, you call out for it, you cry out for it. Verse 4, he says, if you search for it as for hidden treasure, your pursuit of wisdom is that of searching for treasure. It's this concept of being persistent. If you've ever lost something of value to you, you're not content if you're after your first look you don't find it, right? Many of us have had this experience where you're at the store and your child runs in the other aisle. At that point, I don't care where I'm at, and I don't care what I'm there shopping for. My only passion is to search for and find my child, right? That is the persistent pursuit. That's the concept that he's saying. He's saying, son, if you accept my words, if you store them up, you memorize them, you grab hold of them and you hold on to them, All right? If you turn your ear toward wisdom, if you apply your heart, discipline your heart to accepting and to getting and to holding on to, and if you cry out for it, you're saying, hey, I want that. Show me where it's found. I want to go find that. If you cry out for that, and if you search for it, you say, someone says, hey, you know, wisdom is found back there. You're like, hey, let me go back there. You know, what obstacles are in my way? Let me, you actually search and you're persistent. If then we get to verse 5. Then you will understand the fear of the Lord, and you will find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom, and from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. You see, the pursuit of wisdom is not so that I can have answers to life. The pursuit of wisdom is the pursuit of a person, the pursuit of God. If you have no desire to prepare yourself for wisdom and no desire to pursue wisdom when and where it's available, then you are not going to come to an understanding of who God is and what God is all about, because the pursuit of wisdom is the pursuit of God. Wisdom comes from the Lord. Wisdom is not discovered. Wisdom is revealed. We have a responsibility to pursue and go after wisdom, but that doesn't mean that we're going to get it. We only get wisdom when God reveals, because wisdom comes from God. Wisdom doesn't come through our efforts. Wisdom comes from God, from his mouth, from his words, from his commands. We could spend a lot of time talking about what it means to have a fear of the Lord, find the knowledge of God. Just a quick, you know, the fear of the Lord is just a huge concept in the Old Testament. Throughout the whole Bible. Having a fear of the Lord is a relational concept that puts you in right relationship to the object that is a little scary. We are way too flippant with our understanding of God sometimes, where we have lost a sense of awe and respect. The God of the Bible is the almighty, all-powerful, all-knowing, never-changing, holy creator of the universe. Amen. And like we looked last week, the God of the past is still God today. And when you read what God has done in the Old Testament and how he interacts with mankind, that is still the same God today. And yet, just because we don't see him do some of the things that he did in the Old Testament doesn't mean that at any moment he's not capable of that. Having a healthy fear of God does not mean we walk around cowering. It means that I recognize who he is and I have a healthy awe and respect, and so I place myself properly in relationship before him. That's having a fear of God. But a fool lives as if God, with no regard to God. A fool lives as if God is of no consequence. So I just kind of live flippantly however I want. One who is wise understands that I have to be in right relationship with God. And as long as I'm in right relationship with God, I live in safety. I live in peace. As he says in the next few verses, that God is a shield and God is a guard to those who are upright and just and faithful. But if I have no regard for God and I remove myself and I have no sense of awe of God, then God is no longer my shield, my guard. God is the one that I am now standing against, not the one who's standing before me as my shield and guard, but the one who is against me. You see, when we pursue wisdom, then we come to understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. This concept of knowledge of God, when Proverbs talks about knowledge, it's not talking about math or history or any other discipline. It is always knowledge of the person and character of God. That's what biblical knowledge centers on. Because you can't understand science without understanding God. You can't understand mathematics. You can't speak. You can't understand any discipline properly without first starting with an understanding of God. Knowing God's character and His nature is foundational for having appropriate knowledge and then appropriate understanding of our world. And so when we neglect God and we get rid of God, a knowledge of God, we cannot have understanding, because we've removed the very foundation from which all things rest, foundation from which everything, a source of all truth and wisdom and knowledge comes from. So when we pursue wisdom, and we accept, and we store up, and we turn our ear, and we apply our heart to knowledge, and we cry out for it, and we search for it for hidden treasure, then you will understand. Then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom, and from His mouth come knowledge and understanding. You know, just a few observations here. In verse 1, Solomon says, "Son, if you accept my words and my commands." And then in verse 5, Solomon says, "For the Lord gives wisdom, and from His mouth come knowledge and understanding." So Solomon is equating his words and his commands as being sourced or have come from the mouth of God. And for parents, for us, I think that is very wise counsel as we give commands and as we give instruction to our kids, that we always recognize and always posture ourselves is that it hasn't come from us. True wisdom and true commands are always sourced in the revelation of God, the words and commands of God. Something else, just another observation, you know, with that is the wanting to have wisdom but have no desire to pursue or know God means you have no desire for wisdom. We just want life to be conveniently better, or we want things to feel better, but we have no desire for truly having godly wisdom. Just one other thought there, you know, in verse 7 and 8, and just a quick passing thought. It talks about guarding and protecting and a shield for the blameless and the upright and the just and the faithful. Applications of embracing wisdom is righteous moral life and character. In other words, that truly understanding the fear of the Lord and having a knowledge of God produces right character in the person that possesses wisdom. It is a byproduct of that. So if you understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God, then, in verse 9, you will understand what is right and just and fair, every good path. For wisdom will enter your heart, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will protect you, and understanding will guard you. So we have this conditional kind of setup for how to live wisely. If you pursue wisdom, and if you seek it out, then God reveals it to you. And then, once God has revealed to you who He is and what He's all about, then in verse 9, then you will understand what is right and just and fair, every good path. You want to know what is right from what is wrong? Everyone has an opinion. In fact, it would be interesting if you were to just this week listen to all the opinions and the news and everything. Majority of it, most of it, goes back to some kind of moral foundation of what is right from what is wrong, what should be from what shouldn't be, what ought from what is. And it could be anything. I listen to sports talk radio. I really love sports. And it's amazing how many times the conversations kind of go into ethics. You know, what one athlete should or shouldn't done, and whether or not one is being greedy, or how they aren't playing fair or bad calls, or what, you know, what should be fair or what should be appropriate. You want to know what is right from what is wrong? You want to know what is just from unjust? You want to know what is fair? Probably everyone's heard that, you know, if you have, you know, where two or more children are gathered, there someone's going to claim unfair, right? You know, I mean, that's just the way it is, right? That's not fair, you know? That's not fair. We tell our kids all the time, when you compare, you complain. You complain that they foul. That's not fair. You want to know what's fair? You cannot understand what is fair what is just, what is right, without a fear of the Lord and a knowledge of God. Going back to verse 5. And you cannot have a fear, understanding of the fear of the Lord and knowledge of God if you are not in pursuit of wisdom. And pursuing wisdom is not saying, gee, I would like to know. No, pursuit of wisdom is a very active pursuit on our part. So if we pursue, then we will come to understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. Then we will understand what is right and just and fair, every good path. You see, in our opinionated world, we start with what we think is right, what we think is just, what we think is fair. We think every good path, what ought to be done. That's where all the conversation begins and ends, right there. But we never go back to the fear of the Lord, knowledge of God, and we don't go back to listening to the words and commands of God in order to understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God, so that then we can understand what is right and just and fair, every good path. See, there's a progression here and a responsibility. Our responsibility is to pursue wisdom, and God promises that He will reveal it to those who earnestly pursue Him. So how do we live wisely in this opinionated world? You know, verse 10, he says, "For wisdom will enter your heart, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul." See, Proverbs 18:2 says that a fool finds no pleasure in understanding. They just want to open their heart and just let all the whatever just gush out. But they don't want to understand. The end result here, if you pursue wisdom and then you find the knowledge of God and understand the fear of the Lord, then you understand what is right and just and fair. It says wisdom will enter your heart. Proverbs 18:2, a fool just opens his heart and lets all the folly come out. Here, wisdom will enter your heart. And knowledge of God, because in Proverbs, knowledge is always the knowledge of the character. Knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Wow, I enjoy getting to know the heart and mind of God. Knowledge will become pleasant to your soul. Which is the exact opposite of what we read in Proverbs 18:2. How do you and I live wisely in this highly opinionated world? Because it's not wrong to have an opinion. We all have them. The question is your opinion just the folly of your own heart? Or is your opinion coming out of a heart that has been filled with wisdom? Is your opinion coming out of a heart that has a growing knowledge and understanding of God? Is your opinion coming out of a heart that has accepted the words of God and embraced the commands of God, so that your opinion is now really not your opinion, but you are just kind of, you know, resharing what God has said on the matter? Just a few final applicational points. Maybe a question for you to think about is this: what is your natural default when any topic is brought up? Do you say, well, what does God say, or this is what I think? Because oftentimes our first gut reaction kind of is an indicator of where we're at. Is your first thought, well, here's my opinion, or is your first thought, what does God think about that? Let's explore what God thinks about Syria, or, you know, same-sex attraction, or, you know, ethics in sports, or any topic that comes up, you know, parenting, or, you know, my responsibility to my family, or any topic. What does God think versus what I think? A second just thought is that true wisdom is, it is a theological pursuit. It is not an academic or a secular or a worldly pursuit. True wisdom is theological. Because true wisdom is the pursuit of God, not the pursuit of information. True wisdom is the pursuit of God, not the pursuit of just being able to function better in life. True wisdom is the pursuit of God. And we need to capture that. A third is that knowledge of God and His character is a model for how we are to live wisely. You see, when we pursue wisdom, we are pursuing God. When we find God, He and His character and His nature and His words then become the model for us on how we are to live wisely in His world. Because after all, isn't that why people want wisdom? We want to know how to function. Tell me what's right from what's wrong. You know, who should I marry? Where should I work? What should I do with my stuff? When someone offends me, how should I respond? You know, this person has a hothead. Should I make them my closest friend? You know, this person wants some help. You know, but you know, should I help them or should I give to them? Should I co-sign a loan for them? Who should be the people that I hang out with? Where should I go to school? What's the point of education? You could go on. You could get into politics and governance and authority. What's appropriate authority? And you know, how do we know all these things? We want to know what's right and how to live. The model for us right here in Proverbs 2 is if you pursue wisdom, if you accept God's words, if you store them up in your heart like this morning so that you can use them maybe later on this afternoon when an opportunity moment happens, that's why you store them up. If you turn your ear and apply your heart to discipline yourself to embracing it, if you call out for it, so every opportunity that wisdom is presented, you are there, you're calling out for it. Give me more opportunities. And if you search for it as for hidden treasure and look for it as for gold, then you'll understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom, and from His mouth come knowledge and understanding. Then in verse 9, then you'll understand what is good and right and fair, every good path. For wisdom will enter your heart, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Then as you leave these doors, and you start going through the functions of this day and this week, and you start hearing all the opinions, and you turn on the news, and you talk to a coworker, and you hang out with your friends at school, and you're hearing all kinds of opinions, then you can begin to understand how to live wisely in the midst of that. What is wise from what is foolish? Because God's calling us as His people to live wisely. We're going to finish, you know, with a song that just kind of expresses our desire to pursue and know God. And as we sing that, I would ask that it would be a prayer. And as well as it would be our desire that if you desire to live wisely this morning, that you would commit desire to pursuing hard after God. To say, I want to know what God thinks. And I want that to become more and more my natural default position in this world full of opinions, that we can live wisely.